This is a Rabble Podcast Network show.
New voices in your head.
It's Radio Free Radio.
There you've got my story. Just ask a woman. There you've got my story.
This is the F Word, Vancouver's only explicitly feminist radio show. Feminism, a new wave on the radio.
I beat drums in city slums when my heart speaks from and necks, not back at the sound of a gun, but nobody runs, cause nobody knows if nobody's sons just got shot, so nobody comes and nobody stops. Nobody moving, nobody pauses.
You're listening to the F Word on Vancouver's Cooperative Radio, CFRO 102.7 FM. We are broadcasting live, as always, from the downtown east side of Vancouver, unceded Coast Salish territories. And I am Ellie Gordon Marshall, and I'll be your host for today. Megan Murphy is our technical operator. And we produce Vancouver's only explicitly feminist radio show. Listen to us live at 102.7 or at coopradio.org. Feel free to write us at feminisms@gmail.com if you have any feedback or show ideas, or if you want to get involved. Also, make sure to visit our website. That's feminisms.org. Check out our podcasts at theamazingrabble.ca. Today's show is about graphic novels. It's a genre that is increasing in popularity, and I actually noticed that the Vancouver Public Library now has sections in most branches devoted to the genre. For those of you who are unfamiliar with the style, the easiest comparison would be comic books. However, graphic novels usually tell a story from start to finish, are much longer than comic books, and are often targeted to adults and are rife with complex and nuanced storytelling. Today we'll be specifically talking about graphic memoirs. That is, an author telling their autobiographical story through the medium of a graphic novel. And perhaps the most famous example of this is Mouse, that's M-A-U-S, A Survivor's Tale by Art Spiegelman. It was published in two volumes, and the work is the only graphic novel to have won the Pulitzer Prize, which it was awarded in 1992. Spiegelman tells a story of his journey to capture his father's story of surviving the Holocaust. And one of the things that this book is noted for and what's unique about it is that in Mouse, Spiegelman chose to draw all the Jews as mice and all the Germans as cats. Other nationalities are given other animals as the story goes on. The first graphic novel I was introduced to was Persepolis by Marjane Strotapi. The story is of her childhood up to her early adult years in Iran during and after the Islamic Revolution. The book sat actually on my shelf for a number of months before I was motivated to pick it up. I wasn't too convinced that anything that looked like a comic book could be taken too seriously. And in fact, Marjane kind of felt the same way. As I heard her speak once, she said that it wasn't until she read Art Spiegelman's Mouse, which she described as a slap in the face or a wake-up call to prove that graphic novels are actually a very important medium to express oneself. And what's even more intriguing, and why we're talking about this on the F Word, is that some of the most successful and talented graphic novelists, and especially graphic memoir authors, are women. And we are lucky enough to be joined by one this afternoon. Sarah Levitt is a local writer and cartoonist. She has contributed to numerous publications, including Geist and the Georgia Street, as well as CBC Radio. Her powerful graphic memoir titled Tangles, A Story About Alzheimer's, My Mother and Me, was published by Freehand Books in September of 2010, and will be the main topic of discussion today. Thanks for joining us, Sarah.
Thanks so much for having me.
So in the intro to the show, I briefly touched upon a kind of snobbery that I kind of held myself, and one that also Marjane, who is the author of Persepolis, held, when it came to not considering graphic novels a serious type of storytelling. I'm wondering what your introduction to graphic novels was.
The first one I read was definitely Mouse, and it had a huge impact on me, definitely. It's funny, I think that's true that, you know, we think of comics as something trivial, although I think that's less true as more and more people get into graphic. I like to use the word graphic narrative because that's a way of including nonfiction as well as fiction. and kind of different lengths and stuff. But, and it also emphasizes what I think is the is really key for a good graphic narrative is the narrative, right? Like you have to, it's great if you have amazing images, but you have to have that central story that, that draws the reader in just as you do in prose. But now I'm totally off topic, but I think that there is, I've talked to different people, especially, you know, people who've never read comics before who have read my book and who say, well, at first, like, I wasn't sure that this was appropriate for you to draw comics about such a serious and traumatic stuff thing. But then once they read it, they come around. Or I guess if they don't come around, then they don't tell me. But I think it's a perfect medium. I think that if you can get that perfect combination of text and image, then it can be really powerful. It can be a slap in the face. And I like that you found that quote from Marjane Satrapi, because that's how I like to describe books that, that are really have a huge impact on me, is it's always some sort of violence, like, oh my God, it was like a punch in the head or a slap in the face. Like, and that to me is what good art or literature is something really powerful like that. So I think that that graphic narrative is an ideal medium for really serious topics.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I remember when I first started Persepolis, and she kind of starts off with her childhood, and she talks about how at night she would talk to God, and in her drawings you'd see this big figure of this man in white with this long hair, and then eventually through the influence of her parents just overhearing their conversations, she heard of Karl Marx, so she started to talk to Karl Marx at night.
Mm-hmm.
and then through this she kind of comments on the fact that when I was little, I realized that Karl Marx and God looked really similar because of the way she was drawing them. And I remember that was the first time that I thought, oh, I actually really like this method of storytelling. Mm-hmm. It's really got a lot of ways and twists and turns to tell things. So I guess then in terms of your specific story, we've talked about why you like graphic novels, but why for your story did it mesh together? Did that work?
It was a number of reasons. One is that I've always drawn. I've never, I did try to get into art school once, but I didn't get in. But so in some ways, I'm really untrained. But it's always been something that I've done just naturally. And I had started getting into drawing comics. And then when my mom was sick, I did drawings of her all the time. It was one of the ways that, you know, when I was keeping my journal, it was full of writing and drawing. And it was one of the ways that I recorded what was happening with her. And so I had originally thought of doing a prose memoir. And before that, I'd written some poetry, but I'm really bad at poetry. And So after she died, I took this collection that I had from my journals of drawings and notes and put them together into a zine, and then from there realized that I needed to do a graphic work and started working on that. So the overall answer as to why I chose it is that it felt right after trying all these other different forms. And the more that I worked on it, and then now that it's published and seeing people's reactions to it, I feel like, you know, and knowing how I react to other memoirs told in this form, I feel really strongly, not only that it was a good choice for this book, but also that that's what I want to do in my career as a cartoonist or as a writer, is to focus on comics.
Mm-hmm. One thing that you've noted previously is that one of the kind of good things about comics is that because they are more abstract than a realist portrait, is that people are more able to identify and put themselves in with the characters and what's going on, and that's where this kind of, it creates a pretty intimate environment when you're reading someone's memoir done in a graphic novel setting, and you get to know the characters and feel closer to them than maybe you would in a novel, especially a novel that leaves nothing to the imagination.
Mm-hmm.
And so there's a lot of lovely and sad and devastating moments and tangles that do that. And I remember one of the funnier ones is sort of near the beginning, before your mother is ill, and you're on the phone with your parents, and you're kind of talking to them and celebrating your liberation and getting involved in feminist movements and other things that were going on. And it's such a great drawing of your parents of on the phone looking really happy and supportive but a little uncomfortable and awkward, and your mother says something like, "We're really happy for you, sweetie, but do you have to use the word dyke?" It's such a funny part of the novel, but like you just understood what was going on so wholly by just looking at the expressions on their faces, which were really nuanced. It wasn't something that, it's like you said before, they aren't like totally realistic drawings, but there's really, there's something intimate that happens with that kind of work that I really enjoy, graphic novels. So how long did it take?
It took about 4 years. I did a bunch of different versions, and then once it was done and I sold it to a publisher, to Freehand, then I worked with the editor there to do a bunch of edits to the drawings and to the text.
Mm-hmm. I think that's something that I know I didn't quite realize as well, and that many people might not, is just how much work goes into these kind of stories. And like what you said before, not only is the drawing important, but the text is really important. And there's plenty of different styles of using not so much text or using a lot. Was that something that was hard to figure out what your groove was going to be with that kind of thing?
Yeah, I mean, I definitely, it was a new thing for me. I've drawn all my life, but I was just getting into figuring out how to do comics. So there was a lot of trial and error, a lot of times where I tried something out and then had to redraw the page, or was really happy with something and then showed it to somebody else and they were like, "I don't understand." So, I mean, I think that it being my first book, it was a way for me to work out some of the problems of how to do book length graphic work and to find my own style. And, you know, and get more comfortable with it. I think that there's, you know, the more that you read graphic novels, the more you realize that there's a lot of different styles, as you say. And for me, what I'm most interested in and what I'm most drawn to as a reader are pretty simple images, pretty gestural images. And I think that, you know, Scott McCloud, who's a famous writer about, well, famous within comics, I think. He's somebody who's probably the best known person for theorizing about how comics work and explaining them. And he talks about that process that you mentioned of the simpler a drawing is, the more the reader's able to insert themselves in to the narrative. But there's definitely tons of very popular works out there where the drawings are quite realistic and detailed. That's not so much the kind of work that I'm interested in, but lots of people are. And I think you can see parallels between that and prose, where, like you said, there's lots of books where everything's described in so much detail that you don't have to do that much work as a reader, right? Like if you're reading a book where the entire background is described in detail, where the characters are described in detail, where the narrator is constantly explaining to you how they feel about what's going on, there's less room for you as a reader to become really deeply engaged in the story. And I think that's true of graphic works as well. The more information that the writer and artist put into the panels, the less work you have to do. So, so the more comfortable I get with my style, the more I realize what I'm interested in. That being said, there's still things about my drawing that are simply a result of me not knowing how to do something, right? So part of it is stylistic choice, and part of it is like, I don't really know how to draw a hand in that position, so I'm just not going to. So, you know, there's still, my work is not completely where I want it to be, and I think once it is, then maybe I won't be as excited about doing my next project, but, you know, I'm looking forward to my next project and thinking about the things that I'll improve about my style.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, totally. And it's funny, I was just thinking about how sometimes film adaptations of books that I really like kind of end up ruining the story. But for me, because I can't not think of the characters, I don't picture them anymore like I did when I first read it. I picture Frodo Baggins as Elijah Wood, and that's it forever.
That's like the saddest moment on earth. Come on.
I know, but it was funny. Well, when Persepolis was made into a movie, it was done so well, and it really kept with the spirit of the books, and it was done in this black and white cartoon style that it retained all the magic still, which is something that's really special. One thing I wanted to ask you is, you mentioned, I think, Scott McCloud. That's who you said. I was wondering who your other influences are.
Well, Scott McCloud's been really, really important for me in understanding comics, which, especially his book called Understanding Comics. I have so many favorites. To stick with women memoirs, definitely Marjane Satrapi and Aileen Kaminsky Crumb, who's Robert Crumb's partner, and she has this crazy style that's very... how would you describe it? Crowded. She has like... Anyway, I definitely recommend checking her out. And Linda Berry. And right now, I'm actually reading a book by Julie Doucet, who's from Montreal. And I've never been attracted to her work because it tends to be a little abstract for me. For people who aren't familiar with her, she's... I would say probably the best known Canadian woman cartoonist. And her drawings are very, very detailed and crammed full of information. And I'm reading this book now and I'm wishing that the pages were like 10 times bigger so I could really see her drawings because they're so beautiful. And I picked up this book at my favorite bookstore, Pulp Fiction Books on Main Street. And
which sells your novel, I
yes,
noticed.
They
yeah,
do.
I was in there the other day.
I love giving them a shout out because they've been super supportive and they're really supportive of local authors and they can order you books just as fast as chapters. So anyway, but I was in there and they have a great comics collection and the owner was telling me about how New York Diary is more narrative than her other books. So I'm reading that now. That was a bit of a tangent. And Linda Berry is one of my favorites. And then lots of other cartoonists as well. I've developed quite an appreciation lately for Seth and Chester Brown's book, Louis Riel. And I really love Essex County by Jeff Lemire, which was recently in the Canada Reads competition for CBC. Mm. There's just a lot of really great Canadian stuff. And then there's a lot of great American women cartoonists as well.
Mm-hmm. I was watching a bit of... Linda Berry stuff on YouTube last night. She's hilarious. Mm-hmm. She's kind of exactly what you would hope and expect from her really quirky stuff that she writes. She's this totally quirky, amazing person when she's doing lectures. I remember I've only read one of her books, actually. I'm trying to think of what it's called, but it was a memoir, and I remember one of my favorite scenes was her depicting her, I think it was her like baby, one of her baby siblings, and then her grandmother, and how they used to love dancing around the apartment, and she used to be really embarrassed until she finally decided, like, actually, this is really awesome, and there's like a scene of them all, and she's a fairly abstract drawer, it's not very realistic, of them all dancing in the living room, which I always think of fondly when I think of Linda Berry, but she's absolutely hilarious. Have you read, I finally read recently, Alison, how do you pronounce her last
Bechdel.
Name? Bechdel. I recently read her book, and there's some funny moments that also reminded me a bit of your book in terms of kind of displaying these kind of quirky, intimate moments within a couple, and that you would only kind of find in graphic novels, perhaps, but there's a scene of her first kind of coming out and having her first girlfriend, and they're in bed together, and they're also kind of discovering their kind of political implications, and then they're reading Winnie the Pooh together, and she finally bursts out, oh my god, Christopher Robbins was an imperialist, and it was such a great book, and I only knew her vaguely from the Dykes to Watch Out For comics, but that was... I think it's called Fun Home.
Yeah, it's called Fun Home.
Yeah, that was a really great one. Now, a question I imagine you've probably been asked a bunch of times is, did you have any hesitations about writing about such intimate details about your family and your mother dying, or...
You know, I didn't. I had worries about it, but they didn't make me not want to write it. It's definitely something I thought about a lot. And one thing that I learned quite early on in the writing process from teachers or fellow writers was that what you need to focus on when you're doing a writing project is doing it and getting it done. So you can't stop partway through and be like, what is my family going to think of this? Like, you worry about that after you're done. So I always, from the time that I knew that I wanted to write this book, I knew that I wasn't going to ask anybody in my family for permission. At the same time, I didn't want to put anything in that was cruel or that was unfair. And so there's things that happened between people in my family that I chose not to put in because I just thought even if they were true, they would come across more as unfair, and they weren't necessary to the story. So maybe like conflicts that I had. I mean, there's definitely conflicts in there between members of my family, but I didn't put in all of them. And there's some things that happened with my mom that I chose not to put in because they seemed... kind of disrespectful to her privacy. Now, I mean, if it's hard because people say, well, what would your mom think if she was alive? And the short answer is that my mom would be furious at me for exposing things about our family. She hated it. If I ever said something to anybody outside the family about people in my family not getting along, like that was just absolutely forbidden. And, you know, you don't air your dirty laundry and you don't talk about personal, intimate things outside of the family. At the same time, though, if she was alive, then it would mean that she wasn't sick and I wouldn't have written the book. So, you know, I could do my circular philosophical thing. So the fact is that she's not alive. And so I don't have to worry about that in a way. And at the same time, there was still some sort of line inside my head that I wasn't going to cross. So there was this scene that happened with her in the bathroom that I decided not to put in because I thought that it was too much. Although, you know, I have other bathroom scenes in there. So, I mean, at some point, I think for any writer, it's kind of like, can you live with yourself after this is out in the world? And so far, I don't have any regrets. My dad and my sister have responded really well to the book, and which actually was surprising. I knew that my dad would be pretty supportive, but my sister, I kind of thought, like, you know, I don't always think that you look that awesome in the book. But she loved it, and I mean, I tried to show the ways in which everybody in the book, you know, when your family member gets sick, you mess up a lot. And I tried to show all of us messing up and also succeeding. I had no interest in like showing myself as a hero because I wasn't. So that's, I guess I had definitely worries and thoughts, but it didn't make me not want to do the book.
Mm-hmm. And yeah, I was going to say, you definitely don't shy away from portraying the mistakes that you made or outbursts and things like that. And there's actually, I mean, there's, you note in the story that what happens when you become someone who is terminally ill is that you lose all your privacy because you have all of these caregivers around, people are always poking at you and having to do things for you. And one of the kind of stylistically type of things that I thought you did fairly successfully was using just like a black background and a silhouette and with small text to kind of portray like a darker emotion. That was one of the ones. It's like once you become ill, you lose your privacy. And I think it was just your mother's silhouette and it was just a black background, which I really liked. And I know that actually Joyce Farmer, who recently released Special Exits, which is about her, a memoir about her elderly parents and in their later years, and ultimately their deaths, she did change the names of everyone in the book, and including her own character, and changed the little details. And she did write that it's because she was nervous about things and like portraying that kind of stuff. But it seemed a bit unnecessary. But I can see why she maybe needed that for whatever reason. It also, it took her 13 years to write hers.
Yes, I was reading about it because you had mentioned it to me when we were talking about doing this interview, and I was like, how did I not know about this book? It looks amazing, and I ordered it, and I'm waiting for it to come. And Joyce Farmer was really well known, like in the 70s and 80s, for doing feminist alternative comics. And so I think, I mean, she wrote this book, she's 71, I think.
Yeah.
So I just think that's amazing. And it does seem interesting to, like, you know, she did a series of comics called Tits and Clits. And so, but now she's changing the names of people in her family.
I know. I was thinking about that because I didn't know that history about her. So I was looking it up. And then one of the interviews I read, they said, we can't mention the name of the previous publications that she once put out. But, yeah, I'm just about finished that. It is quite excellent. Actually, I was telling you off air about how I came across that book. I was in a really cool comic store in Montreal called Drawn and Quarterly, and I saw the book briefly because I saw that a reviewer compared it to Mouse, and I was like, that's a pretty big deal for a graphic novel. And I didn't want to buy a new book at that point, so I texted myself the author and the title, but then ended up deleting that text. I couldn't remember the name of the book or anything, and I was really choked about that. And I was like, how am I going to find this out? I tried to Google, like, green cover, like, and just all these things to try and remember what the book was. And I finally tracked down the store, and then, like, I couldn't remember the name of the store either, and then asked them, there's this book, I think it was by a woman, I think it had a green cover, it was compared to Mouse, and they were like, Joyce Farmer Special Exits, and they just knew exactly what it was, and that's how I found it. It was really funny. But so I guess the last question I have for you is, what have people's reactions been, beyond your family, just everyone who's read it?
The reactions have been good and intense. I do get a lot of emails about the book. Like, I have gotten emails from a range of people. Some people who knew my mom in the past and who found the book somehow and have written to me about her and about the book. And then from strangers who've gone through this experience, who've had a relative or a loved one with dementia, and it's been very, very gratifying. I'm still kind of surprised every time a stranger reads my book. And it's awesome. It's like the best thing in the world. And I've had really good connections with people about it. And one of the things that I really like is when people tell me that they laughed during the book, because you know, and this other interviewer asked me if people were surprised by the humor in my book, and I'm like, you know, nobody who's been through a horrible, tragic experience is surprised by the humor, because that's what happens. Like, you know, you're sitting there, the person that you love is dying and acting crazy, and sometimes all you can do is just kind of fall down on the floor and start laughing. And I really wanted those moments to be to come through in the book, because that was a really, I mean, my family always had a really weird sense of humor, and that was part of how we survived. And so when people say, you know, I was reading your book and I was laughing and crying at the same time, and it was really hard because I wasn't sure which I should do, that's like my favorite reaction from people, and where I feel like, yeah, you know, I managed to somehow communicate some of what this journey was.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I certainly felt that way when I was reading it, especially the little tidbits that you just add on kind of the blank pages in between sections of the books, just little quotations of what your mother had been saying. They were very priceless. So where can people find out more about you and where to buy your book, how to order your book?
I try to keep the Tangles page on my website pretty up to date about events and news about Tangles. So that's just sarahlevitt.com, and Sarah with an H, Levitt, LEAVITT.com. And when you go to the homepage, there's a link to the page about Tangles. And you can buy my book. I would recommend, if you're in Vancouver, buying my book at Pulp Fiction or at Little Sisters. And you can also order it from Chapters.
Great. Well, thank you so much for joining me this afternoon.
Thanks for having me.
And I urge everyone to go out and buy Tangles for themselves and everyone in their family.